Welcome to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's program will focus on healthcare, IT, progress, and best practices in the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss critical issues facing government and industry leaders and using information technology to improve healthcare and healthcare services. With me today on the show are Dr. Doug Fridsma, the Chief Science Officer and Director, Science and Technology, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, Captain Michael Weiner, the Director, Clinical Informatics, DODVA, IPO, Dr. Peter Levin, the Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Chief Technology Officer at VA, Tom Conway, Director of Federal Business at McAfee Security, Paul Christman, President and CEO, Quest Software, Public Sector, and Sanjay Joshi, the CTO, Life Sciences, EMC, Isilon. Let's get into the show and talk about health IT and where we're at. Let's start with Dr. Doug Fridsma over at ONC. Dr. Fridsma, tell us a little bit about your role in health IT issues and perhaps discuss some of the progress you've seen over the last year.
Oh, sure. Well, thanks. I'm delighted to be here. I currently am the Chief Science Officer for the ONC, and so we support the meaningful use programs to accelerate the adoption of health information technology across the country. In my office and in my role, we identify the standards, we provide implementation support for the technology, and we have, over the course of the last 2 years, seen tremendous progress. We have identified standards that will help support transitions of care. So as patients move between different care settings, they can have their information follow them. We've got standard ways of exchanging the information, and that's the first time that's really occurred in the country. And we've seen a doubling of the adoption of electronic health records in this country among primary care doctors as well. We've had over 100,000 providers now eligible for some of the incentive pay. And so we really are seeing the needle move as people are beginning to adopt and use health information technology.
Man, that's great. I can't wait for the day where I can go to a doctor and then to another doctor, and I have to fill those forms out over and over and over again. And that's great news to hear. Captain Michael Weiner, tell us a little bit about your role with health IT and some of the progress you're seeing from your perspective over at MHS.
It's an exciting time to be in health IT, Jim, and thank you for letting us come in and talk today. I think Doug, his team is really setting the standard for the nation. We'll take a moment and just we'll pause and be excited about what the government has accomplished to date. The VA and the DOD for the last 3 decades have had a fully operational electronic health record, in which we service somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 million patients, beneficiaries, and their families. That data has been electronically entered and captured for years, and we're excited that we now will be able to connect to the nation because of the work that Doug's team is doing and ONC is leading. We will be able to track a service member, their family member, from the time they're born, we hope, right throughout their entire healthcare life, so that whether they're seen in the VA, whether they're seen in the DOD, whether they're seen out with our civilian partners, we'll be able to share that data. And we believe that sharing of data will really bring forward higher quality care, and potentially at a much better cost than we see today.
Not to mention saving lives.
Prolonging life and making life better along the way. The VA and DOD have come together. National Defense Authorization Act back in 2008 brought the two large agencies together to create one common unified electronic health record platform. This year we got our first permanent director named, Dr. Barkley Butler. I think we have a great vision. We're building a great team, and we look forward to being able to sort of share more and help continue to lead the nation.
Yeah, terrific. I know, healthcare, of course, politically has been sort of controversial, but one thing that's not controversial is we need to do a better job of getting the administrative cost down using health IT and automation and modern technology. I think there's a widespread agreement in that, so it's refreshing to hear that those things are happening.
We really believe that that one common platform will help drive that care.
Absolutely. Tom Conway over at McAfee, I think of McAfee, security, privacy, and a lot of other things in that realm. When you think of health IT and health IT records, one thing that's going to be critical is going to be protection of information and privacy and things like that. Are those the kind of things that you're doing to support? Or better yet, let me ask you to explain to our listening audience how a company like yours is helping support moving these programs move forward.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, we are doing all of that. McAfee's the largest dedicated security company on Earth these days, and privacy and security are inherent to electronic health records.
Sure.
So as the private sector and the government sector have continued to adopt this, we've seen more and more clientele get engaged early on in terms of security and privacy. You can't put it on afterwards. You need to bake it in early. So we've been more and more engaged with our clientele earlier on, both in the federal space and the commercial space. A few years ago, we actually verticalized health IT in a commercial space. Mm-hmm. They looked to federal a lot because, number one, that's where the regulation and the best practices come from. But frankly, they're also trying to imitate a lot of the electronic health records progress that's been made in
right.
places like MHS and VA as well.
Right.
So lessons learned. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Learn from other organizations that have gone down a similar path. So what we've done in addition to verticalizing both commercially and federal, we're adding additional subject matter expertise that can get in early with the clients as well. We've hired some people at corporate. We've hired people in the federal market who really grew up in health IT.
Right.
So they can talk as peers to our clientele who lived there, fought the same battles, and help them through some of the same challenges they're going to encounter as they continue to automate.
Right. Terrific. Sounds great, man. Dr. Levin, Peter Levin over at VA. I mean, when we think of the big players here, we heard from Captain Wiener and Dr. Fridsma. VA plays a big role also in this particular. Can you give some ideas of the things that you're involved in and VA's involved in and maybe some of the progress you're making?
Absolutely. Thanks very much for including us
sure.
in this discussion. So at VA, we're in the process of transforming the model from a provider-centered model of care to a patient-centered model of care. And what we're doing really is trying to empower the patients, in our case it's the veterans, the 6 million unique veterans that we see every year, with, you'll be surprised, some low-tech, low-touch solutions that really turn that model on its head. Let me give you a specific example. You said yourself you're looking forward to the day where you don't have to fill out that
sure.
stupid clipboard every
That's
single
right.
time you go to a doctor,
That's right?
Right. Well, the VA.
What was that operation I had 15 years ago again?
You bet. And from your provider's perspective, he doesn't like it any better than you do
right.
because you're not remembering all your medicines, you're not remembering all your allergies, you may not be remembering your operations.
Absolutely.
So what have we been able to do with the VA? Well, we've offered this new kind of personal health record. It's different than the clinical one, different than the thing
right.
that Michael was describing, where he and I work very closely together. But we have this new thing called the Blue Button, which is a personal health record that's been used
okay.
by over 900,000 people that is going to be available before the end of the year to every single federal employee, where we have private sector partners like Aetna, UnitedHealth, Blue Cross Blue Shield are going to make the Blue Button, make this personal health record available to all of their subscribers as well.
Wow.
Well, what does this mean to you? It means that the days of the clipboard are numbered. It means that you're going to have this central repository from your provider, whether it's the VA, the MHS, Aetna, Blue Cross, Kaiser, for example,
right.
You know, those kinds of private sector partners are either already have or about to announce the availability of their records. And what this means to us is that we're moving from a world where you have proprietary systems that are closed, isolated, very, very difficult, very expensive, to open systems that are openly architected, modular, and standards-based.
Wow. Cool.
And what we're solving is the problem of interoperability. Creating a regime where the data itself is in a form where human beings can read it, where the doctors can gain access to it, and where we can do this safely, securely, and privately. It's a very, very exciting time.
Man, it is an exciting time. And but what about, Dr. Levin, what about ex-federal employees? Can I get a Blue Button too?
It depends on who your provider is. So if you're with one of the national providers, the answer is probably yes. And if you're with one of the regional providers, you ought to be asking them.
Wow.
I get the opportunity, the privilege of doing these kinds of discussions a lot. And the ask that I always make is make sure you're talking to your doctor. Make sure you're going there and you're saying, hey, listen, I want my electronic records. I love the services that you're providing. I trust you as my clinician, but I want to be able to see it. And if the answer is absolutely yes, here you go. Maybe they're going to call it Blue Button. They're probably going to call it something. Then you're in business.
Cool.
If the answer is no, you need to have a different discussion.
I'm going to just tell them I know you. You know,
okay.
he told me on my radio show I can get this. Paul Crisman over at Quest Software. How is a company like Quest, how are you positioning to offer services to help government agencies move forward and get these programs rolling and get this stuff done. And tell us how your company fits into the picture here.
So, Jim, thanks. Really, Quest is a provider of software tools for IT professionals.
Okay.
And we actually don't decide what the system does. We actually make the system run better.
Okay.
So as all of these complex applications are being built, all these new applications that are interconnected, we are the IT software tools that help people deliver these applications faster at a higher quality. Because one of the things that everybody's nodding their head in the room about, on the radio you can't see that, but everybody's seeing timelines which are incredibly aggressive to deliver these complex applications
right.
that have never been built before, and
right.
all the interconnects are so important, they've never been done before. So you need a software tool set to actually help develop these complex applications and then manage them in a physical, virtual, or
right.
cloud, or hybrid world where all of these things are going to run. That's our first connect point. Our second connect point is around identity management
okay.
and credentialing, which is so important. You touched on privacy and security. Quest offers tools to help do the federated identity management, which is so important because there's
right.
so many different players
right.
involved in so many different stores of identities that are going to make these applications work.
Yeah, we do a show on identity management, and I've come over the years to believe that identity management is one of the most important issues to get right. If you can get the identity issue, so many other opportunities just immediately become available once you get that. You know, you can opt in with privilege and things like that associated with that identity. let's go to Sanjay Joshi over at CTA Life Sciences at EMC Isilon. Tell us how a company like EMC Isilon is stepping up to support these trends and these programs. I know it's going to generate big data. I know that's coming. So in terms of, and I know that your company's involved in those kinds of areas. But from your perspective, what are some of the key areas?
Good afternoon, Jim, and happy first day of summer.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. My role in health IT specifically is to try and conceptualize, architect, and implement this massive change that's going on, the massive transformation that's going on at the intersection of life sciences, read that as clinical genomics, healthcare, and information technology. EMC and Isilon has made tremendous progress over the last couple of years, as you termed the word big data analytics, within healthcare specifically and analytics in general. Where the technology is becoming more process centric, and I call it ruthlessly efficient,
mm-hmm.
And moving to the cloud, if you will. So and also the overarching umbrella of trust that resides on top of all of this.
Right. Terrific. Thanks, man. Dr. Levin, what do you think are some of the biggest opportunities for like really big changes to be made? Some of the areas that you think should be the focus where change can be exponential?
Yeah, there's two that I can think of right off the bat. One of them I've already mentioned, which is this notion of patient-centered care.
Right.
And where you don't need to be an MD or a PhD to be able to gain control and access to your care. Now, if you have a chronic care condition, that's going to be really important. Many people aren't paying attention to that right now, either because they don't have to, or in some cases because they think that they can't.
Right.
So you're seeing really a cultural shift. This is not about technology or operations. This is about making people aware that they can gain access to their records, that they can keep track of themselves, and because they're going to be the beneficiaries, right? You can talk about societal costs. You can talk about new drugs and medicines, the big data genomic problems. All these things are phenomenally interesting. But the most important thing is I want to know.
Right.
I want to know my kids' immunization records. I want to know the treatments that my wife is receiving. The other huge opportunity, and I hope we'll get a chance to touch on this in the discussion, is changing these stovepipes where you have these proprietary closed systems
right.
completely isolated from one another, where either the government or in some cases the large national systems are paying through the nose to try to get just sort of a thready connection between them.
Right.
What we're trying to do now, and at the VA we've done it, we're opening up these systems, we're creating standards, we're creating modules so you can plug replace things. You don't like your scheduling package, we can fix it. You don't like your pharmacy package, we can fix it. Not in 5 years or for $500 million, but this afternoon for cheap. right? So moving from this doctor-centered model to a patient-centered model, from a closed system to an open system, is enormous opportunities. And there's enormous economic opportunities for everybody at the table and those listening, but the real beneficiaries are going to be the patients, and that's what's most exciting to me.
Yeah, terrific, and I think that's probably the most important beneficiary, you know, that patient. Dr. Fridgman, what do you think? What are some areas that you think are tremendous opportunities, you know, just where we can really improve the way we deliver healthcare and the experience of healthcare?
Well, I think we share the same goals that Dr. Levin has sort of articulated. We want to improve health, we want to improve healthcare, and we want to try to reduce cost while we do that. And so we have partnered with many of our federal partners. For example, with CMS, we're trying to develop electronic ways of capturing quality information and then use that to help improve patient care and their experience that they have with the doctor. I think part of what guides us is, and I think to Dr. Levin's point, we need to try to develop the building blocks that allow us to get to the kind of future that we'd like to see.
Right.
We don't want to create standards. We don't want to create architectures that would be closed, would be proprietary, and that might not let us get to the vision.
Right.
We really want to get to the point where we have the building blocks like we have with the internet. We may not be able to predict that there would be an Amazon.com and that we would be purchasing most of our Christmas gifts using that.
Right.
But we need to try to develop and identify those standards for how we represent information, how we transmit that information, and how we secure that information so that we can enable a future that at this point we don't even know what it might be.
Yeah, right. Steer, not row. You know, I mean, the government puts in place the things, and then we see what happens and where we go. Captain Wiener, what do you think? What are some of the areas of opportunity that you think really will make a difference in the future? Where's the big bang for the buck, so to speak?
Jim, care is delivered in three places, right? It's delivered in the hospital, in an outpatient setting, and then at the house, right? So we keep talking about trying to push that care closer and closer to the patient's living space,
right,
so they can be an empowered patient, right?
Sure.
So we can do daily measurements on them. We can measure their heart rate at home for congestive heart failure, check their blood sugars at home, and let that feed back into a central place, and then we can help with clinical decision support.
Like telemedicine.
Telemedicine. So the amount of data that will create, right, is a challenge. But to take the inpatient, the outpatient, and the home care, where I think the greatest leap for healthcare can occur is in the clinical decision support, whether it be in the inpatient, outpatient, or home. So you take the most complicated patient in a hospital, they're in the intensive care unit, that patient's on. They're on a monitor for their heart. They have a heart pump. They're going through dialysis to make up for where their kidneys aren't working. They're getting all these different sorts of drips and medications. And the amount of data that's created from that is overwhelming for sort of one person to sort of predict what's going to happen.
Right.
So imagine taking all of that data and then doing predictive analytics on it so that I can tell by looking at their lactic acid level, by looking at their pH level of their blood, that in 3 hours, that if I don't make some significant interventions right now, that this patient will not have a good outcome.
Wow.
And I think we're right at that point that where that ability to analyze and predict with an amount of knowledge that's available is in the not too distant future.
Wow, it's kind of like fortune telling thing. I might be afraid. I might be afraid to run my numbers through there, you know, hearing what the results are going to be. I want to hear from our industry panelists here too, but we need to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Quest Software IT Management Solutions help you lower costs, manage risk, extend platform capability and lifecycle, and reduce the complexity of IT management. They make your mission possible, physical, virtual, and in the cloud. Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at dlt.com/mission possible. That's dlt.com/mission possible.
And now here's Gary Newgard, Director of Federal Solutions for EMC Isilon, the leader in big data and scale-out storage.
EMC delivers a portfolio of game-changing technologies, transforming full motion video and ISR. EMC's edge to the national solution is a cost-efficient path to the cloud and the optimum solution for big data.
When your agency's expanding data requires effective storage, visit emc.com/isilon. That's emc.com/ISILON.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Dr. Doug Fridsma from the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, Captain Michael Weiner, DOD, VA, IPO, Dr. Peter Levin from VA, Tom Conway from McAfee, Paul Christman from Quest, and Sanjay Joshi from EMC Isilon. We're talking health IT. We were talking about areas of tremendous opportunity. Where do we see the big opportunities? And we heard from our government guests. Let's hear from our private sector guests. Let's start with Sanjay Joshi over at EMC Isilon. Sanjay, what do you see as some of the areas, big areas of opportunity where technology can really make a difference in healthcare?
Thank you, Jim. Since we're on the radio, let me try and paint a picture with words. So modern medicine is empirical. The four most common tools used in medicine for a long time now have been the stethoscope, the blood pressure cuff, the ECG or the electrocardiograph, and the microscope. And most of these tools, actually all these tools, are inferential and are secondary and tertiary measurements of what goes on in the human body. We have pretty much come to accept some of the errors and other things that come with these secondary measurements. There's a new paradigm that's happening the last 10 years. Actually, it's tremendous progress in the last 10 years. And it's called precision medicine, which is based on the human genome. Again, a short word picture, if you will. This is the roadmap of the human body. It's about 6 billion letters long that is elegantly folded into a double helix. Our DNA is about 6 feet long, folded into a 6-micron thing, which we call a nucleus, in our 50 trillion cells in our human body. That is, to me, precision. And I think precision medicine, as we stand today, will personalize, predict, and prevent medicine. So that's, I think, is a huge challenge. It brings some data challenges as well with it, but to me, that's the road ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we've been reading a lot about the human genome sciences and things going on there, and some of the stuff is just absolutely mind-boggling. It seems like, you know, science fiction kind of stuff. Captain Weiner, you had a comment on that?
Yeah, I think Sanjay hit it out of the park on that one. That's really where we're headed. And I would tell you, just even now, there just something simple such as there's blood thinners that we use in today's world that if you don't have a certain gene in your body, we shouldn't be giving it to you. It's not working. And we're sort of spending on expensive pharmaceuticals that won't help the patient. So even now, if we can just pull that DNA marker down, we could change the outcome of so many patients. So I think that, you know, we're just starting to scratch the surface on that, but I think that's going to be the future for personalized healthcare, right? So now we talk truly about an empowered patient because they understand their genetic makeup and what they can and can't be taking.
Wow, cool. Yeah, we'll come back to that. We're going to talk about the future at the end of the show. I like you might be able to, you know, elaborate a little bit about what that might look like. Paul Christman over at Quest, what do you see as some of the big areas of opportunity?
I'm going to take a far less elegant and a little bit more present tense approach to this. And one of the things I think that we have as an opportunity right now is to drive out cost. And a recent study cited that 78% of healthcare dollars spent in the United States go to treating chronic issues. Right. It is not necessarily a trauma. It's not a battlefield. It is something that is treatable, but it consumes a fantastic amount of money. And treating those chronic issues, it's interesting, Captain Weiner's here from the military, and he's more interested in treating chronic care and driving out costs there rather than talking about triage on the battlefield and picking up that crisis care. It's the chronic care that's absolutely killing the system. And from a technology perspective, what we talked about before, this open, interoperable system is one of the ways we can drive the costs out. It's that enterprise service bus that's being put forward in the IEHR that makes it possible to better manage chronic issues and better help patients manage their chronic issues, things like hypertension, things like diabetes, which consume a fantastic amount of money, and they can be treated in very simple ways if the clinicians have that information available to them and they understand longitudinally what that patient has gone through.
Yeah, I agree. And I've really become an advocate just doing these shows of the open architectures, open source, you know, standards and so forth and so forth. And in a way, I'm hypocritical, but back in my days, CIO at Treasury, I put in a lot of proprietary systems. But that was back then. If I were starting scratch today, it would be a whole different set of issues in front of me. Tom Conway at McAfee, what do you see as some of the big areas of opportunity? You know, when you're thinking about this stuff, where is that big opportunity it pop out for you?
Captain Wiener and I think Sanjay sort of hinted on, I'll take that thread a little bit further, I'll attack quality.
Okay.
Right now, without electronic health records, how are information communicated? It's written, which could be indecipherable or not accessible in real time, or it's verbal, which could be misunderstood, or it's non-existent. So what that leads to, I think, is a lot of defensive medicine, a lot of tests that aren't needed or frankly won't work per Captain Wiener's part, or prescriptions that won't work. So think about if you can get to a point where you have an authoritative data source regarding patient history and record, then everybody can see that record. The provider can do it. The specialist can see it. The caseworker can see it. The nurses and the other technicians can see it. The family members, if someone is not able to make their own decisions, they can see that all as well. So I think we can really drive quality to a lot higher place, and frankly, it's needed. World Health Organization has a study that cites 60% of medical errors are due to poor communication. Mm-hmm. So if we can drive that number way, way down, I think we're going to attack efficiency and cost, as well as increasing quality at the same time.
Sure, cool. Thanks. Let's go with Captain Wiener. Let's talk a little bit about that security and privacy issue, which is so important. Because I think for this to work, that people are going to have to be comfortable with that issue. What are you guys doing, or how are you addressing the security and privacy side of this?
So some days I feel like that question is unfair to the DOD, on the note that we come forward with a network that I think is second to none for security.
Well, that's true, too.
So we have this luxury of...
The mental set is
right,
already serious.
Right, and... So our current electronic health records are tucked behind, you know, probably the most secure network on the planet. There's days that we don't, our patients just take that for granted that their data is secure, and certainly our users take it for granted that our data is secure. I think with, you know, working with ONC and now working with our commercial partners, it's those touch points that we have to ensure that there's a secure movement of data from our network
right
to the outside networks.
Right. Now, Dr. Levin, some of your customers are not behind that firewall. They're perhaps veterans that are out doing their thing and so forth. How are you looking at that security and privacy issue?
Yeah, you bet. So part of what you say is what you ask is a cultural question, which is, you know, these are people, I mean, look at it from our perspective, these are people who we gave loaded guns with live ammunition and fired in anger in defense of our liberty and freedom. So you can't then turn around and say, oh, by the way, we trust you to do all that, but we're not sure what you're going to do with your health information if we give it to you. We're afraid you're going to lose it. You might leave it in a parking lot or your car, right? So there's a cultural question that needs to be addressed here, which is, as long as we have it, as long as it's behind our firewall, we're absolutely, the way that Michael said it is perfect, right? It's the highest level of trust, it's the highest standards of security, and the best privacy that money can buy, right? So we're doing all that, and we're doing that really, really well. Once it's outside of our firewall, the best that we can do is make sure that people know how sensitive this information is. You lose your credit card, you call your bank. You lose your health information, it's a problem. It could be a big one. The second thing that we're doing, and you alluded to this a couple seconds ago, we're moving out of this proprietary realm, right? And I harp on this a lot, not just because it opens the aperture to innovation, opens the aperture of opportunity, economic opportunity for small innovators to gain access to the $5 billion that MHS and VA spend on healthcare every year, but because it's more secure.
making sure that folks see the software that we're running, that they know where the holes are, that they can help us identify and plug those holes. Open source is the best way to ensure that you're running a safe, secure, and private system. It's counterintuitive. People don't realize that. But between those two, the cultural transformation of trusting people with their information and the way that we're now building out this new system that Michael's helping to lead, those two things are really going to make a much better system.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The idea of, with open source, you can see the bits. I mean, so if you can see the bits, you can secure the bits. I mean, I've been through all the arguments of open source security versus proprietary. But with open source, you can see what the bits look like.
Yeah.
With proprietary source code you don't necessarily know what's there.
Yeah.
So that's a
now,
good
I don't
point.
Know if you know, we've established a so-called open source custodian called OSERA, O-S-E-H-R-A, osera.org. I invite your listeners to check that out, where we've already assembled dozens of assets, hundreds of companies, thousands of people are already looking at our software, starting to pull it down. In some cases, they're selling it, which we encourage. In some cases, they're pulling back into the federal service, which we love. But we're making it more secure because people can look at it. More eyes, more brains, more secure.
Right. Very good. Excellent. Dr. Fridsma, what do you? How are you looking at that security and privacy issue?
Well, we like to say that information moves at the speed of trust.
Okay.
So that that if and that involves not just technology, but as the other panelists have said, is that it involves social and cultural issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one thing is that we need to have we're working to develop policies that promote transparency. If people know what their information is going to be used for, then that helps them feel comfortable. So that transparency helps people understand where their data is going and who's using it and who's going to be looking at it. I think openness is important. And so being able to actually see what information is being being covered, initiatives like the Blue Button to be able to see that data, I think is helpful. And people then can feel comfortable about the data that's out there. And I think we're also working on the technology piece because clearly that's an important piece of the puzzle as well. And so figuring out ways to have more granular protection of patients that have protected diagnosis, things related to behavioral health. We're working very closely with our federal partners as well as with National Institute for Standards and Technology, NIST, to try to make sure that we're using the highest grade and the best available technology to secure patient information.
Yeah, terrific. I know when we were first talking about, health cards, health ID cards, and electronic records, people say, oh, what about security and privacy? And then I would counter by saying to them, do you know where your health records are now? I mean, with the exception maybe DOD or someone who spent a life in DOD, nobody knows where their health records are now. They're all over the place. I mean, no one could ever possibly find them. Let's hear from Tom Conway. Tom, this is like a softball for you, isn't it? Since you're doing security and privacy, this is like lobbing you a softball you can knock over the fence. But what's a company like McAfee? How are you addressing the security and privacy issue to support these programs?
It all comes down to risk management, and it depends. Risk management depends on where you sit. If you're the patient, for Dr. Levin, you have one perspective. If you're a provider, you have a different perspective. If you're an intermediary, perhaps a bill payer or an insurance company, you're going to have altogether a different perspective based on liabilities, what you perceive the value of the information is. So really, you need to look across people, process, and technology. People is sort of where you sit. Then what's the process? Because I'm not the only one that's going to have access to that information. This is going to continue to evolve as more and more things go to, quote unquote, the cloud or to outside parties. You want to have some visibility in where that information is, to your point, because it is your information or you're liable for it. One of those two.
Right.
And then the technology piece is how do you implement the first two? You need to make it more automated. So if you see some anomalous access to a record and you can't explain it, you want to have a flag pretty immediately that someone's in here that I don't know and you need to take proper steps. Maybe it's an exception. There's an emergency treatment going on. Fine. But if there's someone else having unauthorized access into your medical records, as some celebrities have in hospitals, you want to nip that in the bud.
Right.
So really, you need to look at risk management and how to best leverage people and process and technology to make the proper determination for where you sit.
Yeah, I can see when we get to the electronic health record, you won't have people's medical history sitting on the door in the hospital for anyone to walk by and take a look at. Paul Crispin, what about how you approach that security privacy issue from your perspective? Do you have tool sets that address that also?
We do, and I agree with our previous comments. It's people, process, and technology. The biggest challenge here is data governance. Who's in charge of the data? who's going to have the right to access that data. And as we said a second ago, it's about granular access. So it's not an all or nothing. I have access to 100% of the record. I may have access to specific parts of it for a specific reason, for a specific amount of time. And then I don't have access anymore. And that very fluid identity and access role-based or granular access to information is one of the most challenging issues for these systems, which are very much used to, I have access to everything forever. And that's really got to change. And it's hard to architect that into systems which were designed in a closed, maybe a firewalled environment. These systems by design are open, and they're designed to include other people. The issue that we really haven't touched on is identifying who people are when they approach the system. And in the DoD, it's actually interesting because there's actually two competing technologies that are in use between the Army and the Navy. The biggest issue that they found in some of these early adopter or early pilots is identity management. Right. Who are you and what rights do you have, when and why, and can we audit? As Tom said a second ago, we want to see anomalous behavior. I recently had my credit card compromised. Right. I knew within hours because my bank was actually monitoring that. They were looking at that, and they knew instantaneously because it's one system. It's one analysis. But in a very, very decentralized, open system, who's going to be monitoring all of those different data sources? Right. It's a huge problem, but it all starts with identifying who you are and what you should have access to at what point in time and why.
Right. But back to that identity issue, you know, that I've said before, if you can solve that identity issue and where you can positively authenticate, that makes a lot of things easier. Captain Wiener, you got a comment on that?
Current EHRs, DoD, VA, and commercial all have audit trails built into them. So we want to know who's been going in. And then there's, you talked about some of that information, and we call it behind the glass. So it was brought up if there's mental health information, but we need it in the patients in an emergency situation. You're able to break that glass. That puts up a flag. Right? And I think more of that is where we're headed to.
Yeah. The exciting thing is I think the tools continue to get better and better and better. And even though the big data and the amounts of data continue to grow, the analytical tools to get through that data. Sanjay, what do you see as somebody, how you guys view that security privacy issue and how are you protecting that information?
Let me just say it quickly. The faster than, this is about open source. So the faster than Moore's Law progress in genomics is only because it's open source in the last 10 years. So let me come back to security now. So I think we're addressing this in a couple of different ways. Firstly, at a very granular level, right now when you change hardware, for example, and you throw away your hard drives, I think the DoD actually has a machine that that churns up all these hard drives into small aluminum cubes. The way we're looking at that, we're a technology infrastructure company. So we're actually working with our partners to provide encryption at rest for the data. That's the first thing. The second thing is we are trying to move to a more horizontal compute and storage platform, things like Hadoop. That's, by the way, also an open source effort. Right. Which will make standardization and interoperability easier. To me, I tell people that big data without big interoperability equals big confusion. So, thirdly, I think we're scaling up. I mean, especially in genomics and radiology and pathology, where data is really growing very, very quickly. We're trying to scale up at an enterprise level and an enterprise management level. And finally, I think our short-term focus is going to be on the private cloud. So I think it's important because public cloud, there are some issues that I think societally we're not ready yet. So those are the four issues that we're
having. We do shows on cloud too, and we always debate what is private, what is public, what is hybrid. You know, is if this is doing something for DoD, is that the public cloud for DoD or the private cloud for on and on. I mean, that debate goes on. I think it was Paul that brought up the governance issue, and I agree that's it's a challenge. One thing is, you know, who owns the data, and in the government that's easy. There's never any questions about that. Everyone gets around the table and agrees right away who's in charge and who owns the data. That's never a challenge, but it does bring up a challenge. And I want to get into challenges. We've talked about all the things going on now. I want to hear a little bit about what some of the hard things are, some of the challenges that need to be overcome to get where we need to go with this. But before we do that, we need to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now here's Gary Newgard, Director of Federal Solutions for EMC Isilon, the leader in big data and scale-out storage.
EMC delivers a portfolio of game-changing technologies, transforming full-motion video and ISR. EMC's edge to the national solution is a cost-efficient path to the cloud and the optimum solution for big data.
When your agency's expanding data requires effective storage, visit emc.com/isilon. That's emc.com/ISILON.
Quest Software IT management solutions help you lower costs, manage risk, extend platform capability and lifecycle, and reduce the complexity of IT management. They make your mission possible, physical, virtual, and in the cloud. Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at dlt.com/mission possible. That's dlt.com/mission possible.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Dr. Doug Fridsma from the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, Captain Michael Weiner from DOD VA IPO, Dr. Peter Levin from VA, Tom Conway from McAfee, Paul Christman from Quest, and Sanjay Joshi from EMC Isilon. We're talking health IT. We've been talking about benefits. We've been talking about opportunities. We've talked about security and privacy. Now, other than the security and privacy, which is a challenge we've already addressed, let's talk about some of the other things that are difficult, the hard things, challenges in your day-to-day job. Let's start with Dr. Levin. Peter, what are some of the things that you face day-to-day, some of the real challenges that you still need to get over and or hurdles you need to cross to get where you want to go with all this?
You can't just say Michael Weiner.
Yeah, okay, so let me start.
Well, he can, but...
So there's this guy at MHS, Michael Weiner. Yeah. So really, my biggest challenge right now is to get more data. It's to get more data in the hands of the clinicians and get more data in the hands of the patients, right? So I think it was Sanjay a few minutes ago said that we've got, you know, these what we call lumped parameters, right? It's a very technical word, but it's, you know, the heart rate, your weight, your glucose measurements. And it ends up that there are about 200 of those. And we're trying to make all of those accessible now. And then you go to the genomics discussion. There are about 20,000 genes. Well, can you imagine giving somebody their genomic data? You wouldn't know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with that, but it's going to be a big data set. What Sanjay didn't mention, which is really, you know, the gene discussion is the tomorrow discussion. The day after tomorrow, we're going to be looking at our proteins, the things that are in our bodies, 2 million of those. So we're going from 200 items to 20,000 items to 2 million items, wow. All of which right. are going to be able to tell us how we're feeling and what the predictive outcomes could be. So we need to bring all this together, the stuff that we know today and the stuff that we're going to know tomorrow, in a way that's useful information for patients and for doctors. So from my perspective, this starts with what we're doing now with the blue button, making a little bit of information available, getting rid of the clipboard, making sure that everybody who's authorized to see it can see it. And then we're going to go to this open source model where we're making sure that the standards are clean and clear, that the connections are hygienic to make sure that they're safe, private, and secure. But most importantly, from my perspective, is opening the aperture of innovation so that it's not just, you know, the four or five large systems integrators selling billions of dollars worth of broken software to the federal government, putting patients' lives at risk. That's really, for me, the biggest problem of it all. And then we're going to cross the line. I'll know that we've succeeded when we really have those innovations. The first time somebody says, you know something, I don't like my pharmacy package in this hospital, I want a new one, and they can do it at no cost in the next day because the standards are there, because the interoperability is there, because the data is already flowing. That's how we're going to know that we won.
Wow, terrific, terrific. And we're going to come back before we end the show where you can talk about where this all leads, what the world's going to look like down the road. Captain Weiner, what do you think are some of the really tough things yet that have to be accomplished, the challenges, things when you get to work, you know, that are still difficult to get done?
The health IT space is 2 decades behind other industries, banking industry, aviation industry, and I don't think it's a technology issue any longer. I think it's a cultural change management issue, right? So we go see the word.
I mean, I think that 81 radio shows, and I think all 81 shows at some point in time, someone says it's not the technology, it's the culture, and you nailed it again. But yeah,
we all go see our physicians, and they're taking notes and they're writing it down. We sort of accept that today, right? In what other industry are we sort of writing on paper and storing in a record? But there's a workflow involved. There's a culture. There's, physicians are trained in the paper record. So, again, the work from ONC to help move the nation forward. Now, for the VA DoD, it's two large agencies, two cultures, two workflows that exist on two electronic health record platforms, and we're trying to bring those onto one platform. That culture, that change management, I think on a day-to-day is where we spend a significant amount of our time and resources to make that generational change, that transformation, as smooth as possible.
Yeah, I tell you, that change management in the culture issues are tough issues. You can change somebody's job overnight. You can say, this is no longer your job, this is your job. But changing behavior and changing, attitude toward it in the way we always have done things, now you want me to do something different. It's always a difficult challenge in the workplace. Dr. Fridsma, what are some of the big challenges that you still face on a day-to-day basis, things that you really need to get out of the way, so to speak, to get to where you want to go?
Sure. Well, I think, as it's been mentioned, I think these business drivers are really what are going to drive adoption in what we are trying to get done. The issue around standards is not that we don't have them. The issue is that in healthcare, we have too many of them.
Right.
And so one of our biggest challenges is to try to get consensus on what we're going to use.
Right.
Excuse me. And so part of what we've been doing is trying to crowdsource the activities that we do.
Hmm.
So what we do is we present a challenge, we try to define what success is, and we say we want to lower the cost of the way in which laboratory interfaces or laboratory systems connect with one another. And so we have about 1,200 people that represent about 350 different organizations that meet every 3.5 hours over the course of a week.
Wow.
To actually drive forward and accelerate the standards consensus process as well. And so as we get more data, we should be able to use that data in ways that are standardized and get us to interoperability, that we can exchange and combine and analyze that data in useful ways.
Wow, this is great stuff. And I'm really glad we're getting this information out, because I think a lot of folks don't realize all the progress that's being made. I mean, I think all people see is what they go to their doctor and they're seeing some computers now and then. But no one's understanding what's really going on behind the scenes here. We got about 12 minutes left in the show, and we like to kind of get a vision for where you all see all this going, what it's going to look like in the future. Let's start with Sanjay Joshi over at EMC Isilon. Sanjay, where's this going down the road? What's the vision for what it looks like, that to-be state out there in the future?
Thank you, Jim. Let me first say that I think the tenet in medicine is primum non nocere, first do no harm. And I think we need to understand that every time we are, as technologies get into the healthcare field. I think Dr. Levin mentioned the genome and the proteome, or our proteins. Let me give you a context in terms of size. So a finished genomic data set is about 1 terabyte. It's about 1 million gigabytes. A finished proteomic data set, which he mentioned correctly, we really don't know how many proteins we have actually today. It's some people say a million, some people say 2, maybe 5, we don't know. It's a new field. It's about an exabyte. That is 1 million terabytes.
Wow.
So each of us humans carry about a finished data set about an exabyte.
Wow.
So that's a context that I'm trying to lay before we go forward. Yeah, humans are the big data set.
Okay.
If nothing else in this program, we are walking big data sets.
Okay.
So I'll try and make the future into two different sections. The first is about 2 to 7 years, and the next is about 7 to 14, if you will, in a 7-year increment. So the first part is, I think Captain Weiner and Dr. Fridsma, Dr. Levin have mentioned the Health Information Exchange, the HIE.
Right.
Today, there are about 3 HIEs in our country, Massachusetts, along the I-90 corridor, actually, Utah, and my home state of Washington, which is the most recent one. We need all 26 of the projects that are in play to happen as soon as possible.
Okay.
That actually, in my view, builds what I call the community cloud, and the Blue Button project was mentioned. This is where data exchange becomes easy, and this is the narrow waste of information. Adoption of the Blue Dot Project, again, from a community perspective, accelerating that. And I look at, again, molecular diagnostics, or MDX as the acronym is called, and pharmacogenomics. Captain Weiner mentioned the easiest thing in genomics is to figure out, you know, what are the adverse reactions, for example. Right. Are we giving too much dosage? You know, is the toxicity correct or not? Personalized medicine. In the 7 to 14 year horizon, I would say the issue is training. We need to train our physicians. We need to train our clinical geneticists to understand what this data means, first of all. Right. And how do you tell the patient what that means?
And a culture shift for them, because they're going to be delivering medicine a lot different than they do today.
And finally, I think in that time frame, the public cloud adoption, I believe, is feasible. Cool. So with that,
All right, very good. Paul Crispin over Quest Software. What's your crystal ball look like, Paul? What's it look like to you out there? Where's this all going?
Well, I look forward and I see two major drivers. One is politics. And unfortunately, politics is ever present. All the way from the Supreme Court, looking at the ACA, a constitutionality, all the way down, as Sanjay just said, to state and local organizations putting together health information exchanges, health insurance exchanges. Politics and government rules and regulations will drive a lot of these things. I see that as an ever-present sort of umbrella or a context for all of these things to happen, and that won't change. The other thing that I bridge from politics and all politics is local. One of the other things is I think all innovation is local. And if you think about things like crowdsourcing, or if you think about open source development efforts, or we think about local data sets that are being cobbled together, brought together on purpose, that's really where I think the innovation's going to happen. It's also where the biggest problem is. It's that last mile. It's what HITECH is supposed to solve as a program to help the local healthcare provider get involved with electronic medical records. Yeah. That is a huge challenge. And HITECH is something we haven't touched on, but it is really, I think Captain Weiner said before, it's bridging and breaking down the healthcare palace of a hospital and pushing it into the community. Right. Without HITECH, without the ability for the local clinicians to participate and the local rules and regulations to adjust and participate in an open standards-based system, we're really not going to drive the cost out, which is really the big, big problem in this industry.
That's a good perspective, too, and looking at that local issue. You know, I used to always argue when I was in there, we shouldn't call it the last mile anymore. We should start thinking about it as the first mile. Think about that first when you get into any particular project. Dr. Levin, Peter, what's it look like in the future? Where's this all going?
Well, we're going to move away from this sort of big system, expensive, you know, encyclopedia worth of requirements that you spend millions of dollars creating. These are lumbering dinosaurs. And, you know, we're not talking about a zoo or an amusement park here. We're talking about your hospital. All right. So we need to move away from that. We're going to put in the platforms, people like Doug, people like Michael, I hope the VA too. We're going to put in the platforms that are creating open access, open standards, all safety, privacy, and security there. You wouldn't buy a house. I'll give you an example. You wouldn't buy a house that has special electrical sockets. You can only buy your refrigerator from the guy that builds your house. You can only buy your TV from the guy that builds your house. The reason we have standards there is so that you can buy whatever toaster you want. You can buy whatever hairdryer you want. We need that same kind of philosophy in healthcare. You wouldn't buy a car where you needed special air for your tires, right? We can do this in healthcare too. I think Michael said it best. They're 20 years behind. We're going to look at data at rest and making sure that there's a fortress around it and people can't kind of get into your system and start meandering around. We're going to look at data in motion and making sure with the standards initiatives that Doug's leading that we can do this over a hygienic channel and making sure that people have access to it. And we're going to look at data in my hand. I want to be able to see where I am, how I'm doing on my chronic care management. And by the way, not just me. I want to do it for my parents. I want to do it for my kids. I want to do it for my partner. I want to do it for the friends that trust me. And I want to make sure that I have access to that over a safe, secure, and private channel, but it's complete and that it's actionable. So it's a very, very exciting time.
Terrific.
To be here.
It is an exciting time. Tom, what's it look like to you in the future there? What's your minute and a half version of this?
Well, speaking as someone who's a patient, a caregiver, an insurance policyholder, and a taxpayer, I hope by the end of this decade, everybody has an electronic health record in this country.
Right.
Not just any health record, one that is transportable, that's interoperable, that is secure. And I think to get to the secure part of it, we sort of need to follow the model of the financial industry, mm-hmm. where no one's in charge, but everybody's got a say.
Right.
Everybody's accountable. Everybody's got visibility, where it's an ecosystem that works together, not one person over another. Competitors working together, collaborators working together, and people in the same sphere working together. Because at the end of the day, it's all about trust.
Right.
All these great gains in efficiency and effectiveness will go away if there's not a model of trust underlying everything we do, and that's based on security and privacy. If people don't feel comfortable with electronic health records versus manual health records, whether they be doctors or hospitals or patients, we're not going to realize all these savings.
Right. That's why the discussion here, stepping up to make sure those issues are covered along the way. Captain Weiner, what's the future look like to you? Where's this all going?
Jim, the future is bright. It's better quality care. It's America utilizing its resources for health IT, driving the U.S. healthcare industry to the back to the top of the world healthcare market. When I was in medical school, I was told to read two articles every night before I went to bed. If I do that now, in 1 year, I'm 12,000 articles behind. Right? So the amount of information that's out there, it is the information we need to drive that better care. The question is, how do we get all that, make it meaningful, make it useful, and then deliver it to the providers and to the empowered patients to help to drive that better care for patients, families, caregivers, and throughout the continuum of care, once we make it interoperable, like this is going to be an amazing decade.
Wow, well said, Captain Weiner. Dr. Fridsma, what's the future look like for you? Where is this all going?
Well, I think ultimately, all of the work that we do is there to enable and empower our patients, and I think I sort of see a future in which, when patients think about their information, they don't have to worry. They don't have to worry that their healthcare is high quality. They don't have to worry that providers are going to have the information to provide safe care. They don't have to worry that their data is safe, that it's accurate, that it is complete, and that it's available to the people that will be taking care of them. And so when you're sick, or even as you're trying to get healthy, you shouldn't have to, that's one of the things you shouldn't have to worry about. And I think finally, ultimately patients need to be empowered. In the UK, they have a phrase, no decision about me without me. And okay. I think including patients in the decision-making process and the process of care is ultimately where we'd like to be.
Wow, that's well said. Well said. Let me try to close out here with a few things. I took a few notes, as I always do. I were talking a couple things that rang out to me. One thing that came across loud and clear is there's tremendous progress going on right across the board in all these areas. Standards are key, and we need it to be the right standards. As Dr. Fridsma said, there can't be too many standards. We got to get down to the subset of standards that we need. The privacy and security issues are important, and they're being addressed right up front. It's something that needs to be done right up front. We talked about moving to patient-centered care. In your closing remarks here, you mentioned that, the fact that it's all around the patient-centered approach. The new paradigms of precision medicine, which is fascinating to me, that was changing the whole way that healthcare will be delivered in the future. OSERA.org, check it out on the website, for a lot of progress being made. Governance was brought up as being important, and I think governance will be a key issue too, to make sure that we find a way to manage and move forward and keep everybody on the same track. I was fascinated by the fact that moving towards local, I think, Paul, you brought that up. We got to focus on the local communities too. That's where innovation occurs. That's where that last mile or first mile is going to be critical. And as we look to the future, there's exciting things happening. We got exciting news. We look for a day. We'll have lower costs. We'll have better efficiencies. And essentially what it's all about is better lives for the people that are being served through the healthcare system. With that, I want to thank a few folks. First of all, thanks to our panelists for taking time from your busy schedules to come out here and be with us to pass on your talk about your progress. Thanks to our sponsors, without which we wouldn't have a program. Thanks to the good people here at WTOP, WFED, do such a great job. And most importantly, thanks to the listening audience out there for tuning in. Thank you. You've been listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The show was produced by the Trezza Media Group and the Fleisig Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.